The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com. Metaxas Show with your host, Eric Metaxas.
Hey there, folks. If you've been listening to this program, you know that I love talking about science and faith. If you've been listening to the program recently, I've been talking about my book, Is Atheism Dead?, the first third of which deals with science and faith. One of the figures I write about in my book is Stephen Meyer. He's the author of Return of the God Hypothesis. The title is Return of the God Hypothesis, Three Scientific Discoveries That Reveal the Mind Behind the Universe. And we have him right here, Stephen Meyer. Welcome to the program.
Great to be with you, Eric, as always.
You're in the northwest of this nation, are you not?
Yeah, Seattle, Redmond, where Microsoft is.
Never heard of it. So you and I have talked so much about this subject that I was thinking where we should start today. And I guess I want to start here. In my the first chapter, or it might even be in the introduction of my book, Is Atheism Dead?, I talk about a conference in 1985 when you something happened to you at that time, and I want my audience to be familiar with this. If they've read the book, they already know about this. But tell us who you were at that time and what you saw at that conference. Because in a funny way, this is what kicks off your journey, and to some extent kicks off the journey in my book. So why don't we start there? Because that's just it's fascinating to me.
Yeah, it was a huge pivot point for me. I was working as a geophysicist for a major oil company in Dallas, and I was doing a work called digital signal processing of seismic data. So it was an early form of information technology being used to image the subsurface of the Earth. And I had long been interested not only in science, but also in philosophy. I did physics and geology in college, but also a minor in philosophy. And I heard about a conference that was coming to town that was going to be debating the big issues at the intersection of science and philosophy, the origin of the universe.
I don't remember. Who put on this conference in Dallas in 1985?
A Dallas businessman supported it, and a young scholar named Roy Abraham Varghese. Who gathered these luminaries in science and philosophy, Nobel laureates, and one of the participants was Donald Goldsmith, who was Carl Sagan's science advisor for the Cosmos series. Another was Alan Sandage, a great Caltech astronomer who had been Edwin Hubble's graduate student. People at the conference, the big issues being discussed were the origin of the universe, the origin of life, and the origin and nature of human consciousness. And each of the panels was divided between scientists who had a theistic worldview on the one hand and a materialistic or atheistic worldview on the other. And so the resulting conversations were fascinating. But what struck me at the event was that the theists seemed to have the intellectual initiative, and it surprised me. In the session on the origin of the universe, Alan Sandage spoke and surprised people by sitting with the theists. He had been a longtime agnostic. He was a Jewish agnostic, and he'd had a recent religious conversion. And at the conference, he explained how the evidence for the beginning of the universe, what we now call the Big Bang Theory, had raised questions for him that were profoundly philosophical and religious. For example, what caused the origin of the universe a finite time ago? He explained that this was not something that could be explained within the realm of physics as we know it, because it was, after all, the physical universe that came into existence a finite time ago, before which there was no physics, no matter to do the causing of the universe. Robert Jastrow was also a participant, and he, of course, about that time had written a book called God and the Astronomers, in which he famously talked about scientists scaling the final peak of ignorance, about to peel back the final veil of ignorance, and found that there was a band of theologians that had been waiting there for centuries, because at the beginning there was no physical or scientific explanation for the origin of the universe. Then in a panel on the origin of life, there was a similar, very dramatic presentation by a scientist, Dean Kenyon, who'd been a leading figure in what's called origin of life research. And he announced that he no longer accepted his own theory and was instead intrigued with the idea of what he called natural theology, and the idea that the digital information stored in the DNA molecule was pointing to a master programmer for life, what he called an intelligent cause. And so I was kind of blown away by these presentations. I had taken a lot of science, but I was unaware of the extent to which these scientific discoveries had fairly obvious theistic implications, and that the materialists were on the defensive.
The reason I wanted you to start there, because we have to think, this was 36 years ago. A big part of my own book is Atheism Dead. I deal with the way information travels and doesn't travel. In other words, the idea that this happened in 1985, it changed your life, and in a funny way, that information just leaks out slowly, slowly over the decades. Many people will not even know of any of this stuff until now because of your book, because of my book. And I just find it fascinating that the secular world in which we live, it's almost like you're living in a bubble that it's protected from all of this information. And that suddenly this information from 1985 finds its way into the popular culture, and people start realizing, wow, so these geniuses, these scientific figures, had come to faith and had reconciled faith and science in 1985. But it's almost like it takes its time to work its way. You know, it's like the trickle-down theory of information. Because you knew this back then. You were doing the math and the science and the figuring it out. But so many people in the culture were still operating on the old model, the Carl Sagan model, you know, that there's
the
nothing
universe
beyond
is all there is and all there ever was and all there ever will be idea, you know, that the universe is eternal and self-existent. But from the 1920s on, there have just been one discovery after another that has successively confirmed that the physical universe of matter, space, time, and energy had a definite beginning, before which there was, again, no matter to do the causing. To explain an event like that, you need a cause which transcends the domains of matter, space, time, and energy. In addition, in physics, this was one of the things that was discussed at the conference, we've learned that the basic parameters of physics are so-called finely tuned. They fall within very narrow tolerances against all odds and for no underlying physical reason to make life, make the universe a life-conducive place. And so many physicists, including at that conference, were saying that the fine tuning pointed to a fine tuner. Now, since that time, there's been the idea of the multiverse that's been proposed, that there's a gabillion other universes out there, so many, in fact, that the improbable parameters that we find in our universe had to arise somewhere by chance. But the problem with the multiverse is that the so-called universe-generating mechanisms that have been proposed by the physicists all themselves require prior fine-tuning, and just taking us right back to where we started. So, but to your other question, some of these ideas were fairly new in the 80s. The implications of the Big Bang theory was just starting to percolate. The idea of intelligent design was just kind of getting off the ground. And one of the things that part of my story is that encountering these scientists, raising questions about the scientific or the evolutionary explanations for the origin of life, led me to investigate whether or not it was possible to develop a rigorous scientific case for intelligent design. And work I ended up doing in my PhD in Cambridge helped, for me at least, to answer that question. And in 2009, I finally wrote a book on that called Signature in the Cell. And since then, people have been asking me, well, okay, you see evidence of intelligent design in life. Who do you think the designer is? And that's the reason I wrote the most recent book, because I think
I'm pretty sure it's Norma Kamali. And we're going to be right back. I'm talking to Stephen Meyer. The book is Return of the God Hypothesis. Don't go away. There's too much coke and too much smoke. Look what's going on inside you. Hey, folks, I've got to tell you a secret about Relief Factor that the father-son owners, Pete and Seth Talbot, have never made a big deal about, but I think it is a big deal. I really do. They sell the three-week quick start pack for just $19.95 to anyone struggling from pain like neck, shoulder, back, hip, or knee pain, $19.95, about a dollar a day. But what they haven't broadcasted much is that every time they sell a three-week quick start, they lose money. In fact, they don't even break even until about 4 to 5 months after if you keep ordering it. Friends, that's huge. People don't keep ordering Relief Factor month after month if it doesn't work. So yes, Pete and Seth are literally on a mission to help as many people as possible deal with their pain. They really do put their money where their mouths are. So if you're in pain from exercise or even just getting older, order the three-week quick start for $19.95. Let's see if we can get you out of pain too. Go to relieffactor.com, relieffactor.com, or call 800-500-8384, 800-500-8384, relieffactor.com. I use it. It works. Welcome back. I'm talking to my friend Stephen Meyer, the author of many books. The new one is The Return, or rather, Return of the God Hypothesis, three scientific discoveries that reveal the mind behind the universe. Before we go much further, what are those three scientific discoveries in a nutshell?
Absolutely. The first is that the universe, the physical universe of matter, space, time, and energy, as best we can tell, had a beginning a finite time ago in the past, before which there was, presumably, therefore, no matter or energy to cause the universe to come into existence. Secondly, that from the beginning of the universe, or soon thereafter, the basic parameters of physics have been exquisitely finely tuned to allow for the possibility of life, suggesting a fine tuner, if you will, for the origin of the universe. And then thirdly, in the realm of biology, at the foundation of life and even the simplest living cells, scientists have found digital information stored in DNA, as well as a complex information storage, transmission, and processing system that's just absolutely awesome, and which points to, as I argue in the book, a master programmer for life. So we see evidence of design at the foundation of life in the universe, and we see that the universe itself had a finite beginning, suggesting a creation event at some time in the past.
It's kind of funny, Steve, and I think we've talked about this privately, but in my book, Is Atheism Dead?, I roughly have the same three things. And this was before I knew that you were putting it in this way. The third one, I put it differently. I kind of, you know, it's more about James Tour and abiogenesis, but it's the same concept. And it's funny, though, that, you know, we're both logical or try to be. And these are three just astonishing arguments for God. There's just no way around it. And it's funny. I mean, I guess I'm glad to hear that you use these three, because they struck me viscerally as the three arguments that I wanted to talk about. The Big Bang, in some ways, is a curious choice, because I think a lot of people think, well, that's old hat. I don't think it is. At least that's why I revisit it, and I talk about you a little bit in that chapter. But why do you say why is it worth dealing with the Big Bang, something that presumably we've known about for a long time?
Well, science and philosophy do intersect, and scientific discoveries can raise larger philosophical or worldview questions. And every worldview has to answer the question, what is the thing or the entity or the process from which everything else came? And the default way of thinking about that from the late 19th century, was that the universe is eternal and self-existent, that matter and energy play the role in a materialistic worldview that God plays in a theistic worldview. In other words, it's the thing from which everything else comes, and it's always been here, and therefore doesn't need an explanation. But one Princeton physicist, Robert Dickey, put it, if an infinitely old universe would relieve us of the need of explaining the origin of matter at any finite time in the past. But if the universe is finite, which is what all the evidence now points to, then that raises a big question that materialism can't answer, which is, where did the matter and the energy come from in the first place, at that beginning point? And this troubled Einstein, this troubled Arthur Eddington, this troubled Fred Hoyle, the great astrophysicists and physicists of the early part of the 20th century, who were confronted with this evidence, all recognized that it posed a huge challenge to scientific materialism or scientific atheism or scientific naturalism, whatever you want to call it, the idea that matter and energy were the prime reality, not God.
But people, what I find funny, I mean, I find a lot of this stuff funny just because it involves human beings and their foibles and their insecurities and the mistakes. It's funny to me, and I know I've mentioned it a few times on other programs, but the idea that Einstein was so insecure in 1911 and 12 that he was embarrassed by discovering through his equations that the universe is expanding, because that implies that it expanded from someplace, which is to say a point, which implies it once didn't exist. He was so embarrassed by this that he thought he's going to lose credibility with his scientific colleagues, the smacks of religion. So he tries to hide it effectively. And if anybody ever is embarrassed about worrying about what others think, and we should be embarrassed, we should, you know, follow the evidence and the logic and the truth. But the idea that Einstein was unwilling to deal with this, and that he hides it, you know, this fudge factor that he puts in there, and then people come from the outside and embarrass him and say, no, you're right, you're right, you're right. And it's not until, 1929 in Pasadena that he says, yes, I was wrong in saying that I was wrong, meaning I was right, but I hid the fact that I was. I just find that funny.
It's a crazy story, because his equations, as you mentioned, from general relativity, imply a dynamic universe. His equations imply that matter is curving space, or this is his concept. But if matter's curving space, then and gravity, that's his idea of gravity, is gravity is matter curving space. But if gravity is the only force in the universe, then you would expect that we'd live in a big black hole, unless there's a countervening force creating empty space. And he called that the cosmological constant. And what he did, and that implied a dynamic universe that's expanding, which means expanding from a point, which means a creation event. And he was deeply troubled by this, because he was, at that point, a fairly ardent scientific materialist. Later in his career, he kind of shifts. And one of the reasons for that is the evidence showed that the universe was expanding. And he was first told about this in a taxi cab ride with the Belgian priest Georges Lemaître. And then it was 31, not 29, but we didn't need to quibble about that. He's out at he goes to see Edwin Hubble at the Palomar Observatory at Mount Wilson, and he's shown the evidence of the what was called the red shift, the light coming from distant galaxies is being stretched out, suggesting a universe that's expanding. And he, 2 weeks later, does an interview with the New York Times and admits that, yes, the universe is not static, it's dynamic, it's expanding, and therefore there's a beginning. And he later said that his attempt to fudge the equations to portray the universe as in perfect balance between the outward push and the inward pull, so that was the greatest blunder of a scientific mistake or of the scientific career, and that the evidence showed the universe was in fact expanding from a creation event.
I never heard that he was with Lemaître in a taxi cab. Do you know what city they were in? I love.
Yeah, they were in Belgium. Or I think it was Bruges, Belgium. They were going to a physics conference called the Solvang Conference. So a lot of crazy science happens in informal settings.
Yeah, it is amazing. And I guess I thought it was in Pasadena in 1929. There was a conference where he first mentioned this. But in any event, you have three people. You have this Russian Jew, named Friedman. You have this Catholic priest, Lemaître, and then you have a secular at the time. I'm sorry, Hubble. I don't remember where Hubble was when it
I
came
don't know
to
what
religion.
I don't know exactly.
But you have three
he was
people.
Sort of reluctant. Yeah,
three people from three different parts of the world, parts of it, and they all are saying, "Hey, Einstein, you're wrong." It's kind of funny that he was embarrassed, and I find it interesting that already in 1911, the very thing that you and I are pushing against is this false idea that faith and science are somehow at odds. So that can you imagine that 110 years ago, already Einstein was embarrassed if there were faith implications? I mean, that this had taken hold so strongly from 1859 and Darwin, that even Einstein 110 years ago is, you know, part of the problem. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, there was a huge solidification of this scientific materialist worldview at the end of the 19th century. Darwin gave us a theory about where we came from. Marx had extended that to give us a picture of the future, a utopian materialistic view of the future. Freud was in the early 20th century had a theory about the human condition and what to do about human guilt. And you had these three great figures who were advancing a materialistic worldview that answered all the basic questions that Judeo-Christian religion had previously answered. And so intellectuals at that time were really dug in on this idea that a materialistic concept of the origin and reality. There was nothing but matter in motion fundamentally. And the story that you tell in your book and I'm telling in my book is of these three big discoveries that have reversed that. And yet you're right. There's a huge delayed trickle-down effect, if you will. There's a huge disparity between what the science is actually telling us and what very prominent voices in the culture are telling young people, for example, and the rest of us about what science means. You've got the whole phenomenon of the new atheists, Richard Dawkins, Lawrence Krauss.
When we come back, I want to talk about that specifically because that's I'm fascinated by that. Of course, I write about that somewhat in my book. Folks, we're talking to Stephen Meyer. New book is Return of the God Hypothesis. Absolutely fascinating. We'll be right back. All my pictures seem to fade to black. Hey, folks, Eric Metaxas here. Joe Biden and the Democrats have laid out the most socialist agenda our country has ever seen. Instead of following President Trump's blueprint that had the economy booming, the Dems are going to raise taxes, increase regulations, and skyrocket an already outrageous national debt. If your retirement is in traditional investments, it is in jeopardy. Americans should be diversifying their investments with gold and precious metals. Gold gives you control over your wealth and protects you from market volatility, inflation, and a weakening dollar. When investing in gold, I turn to Legacy Precious Metals. Legacy Precious Metals has over 40 years of experience in helping Americans protect their finances, and this team is prepared to patiently consider your own personal financial needs. If you're looking to invest in gold, call the good folks at Legacy Precious Metals today at 866-473-6204 or visit them online at legacypminvestments.com. Don't leave your retirement to chance, friends. Contact Legacy Precious Metals today. That's 866-473-6204. Folks, I'm talking to Stephen Meyer. You may know of him. You may have seen him in our Socrates in the City series. By the way, if you haven't, go to SocratesInTheCity.com. A couple of tremendous interviews with Stephen Meyer. One of them has gotten so many views, I can't even remember how many, but just tons of views. People seem to love that one in particular, SocratesInTheCity.com. He has a book out now, a new book, Return of the God Hypothesis. So, Stephen, you believe, and I also believe, that we're at we can call it a tipping point, a paradigm shifting inflection point in Western culture, where over the decades, the arguments for God have become so strong that with books like yours and others, there's a shift going on. Now, you're really you're in a world where you talk to actual scientists. Do you find that scientists out there are quietly saying, yes, this seems clear, the arguments in your book, Return of the God Hypothesis, are compelling? What do you hear out there in that world?
Yeah, I do think there's a shift going on. I was very pleasantly surprised at some of the endorsements that came back for the book from scientists to whom the publisher had sent it, and very prominent people, a Nobel laureate. You've mentioned Professor Jim Tour at Rice University, who's one of the top organic chemists in the world and a nanotechnology specialist. We've had a scientist recently who's come to affiliate with our work at Discovery Institute, one of the top paleontologists in the world, who sometime between 2009 and 2016 had a big rethink of the materialistic Darwinian perspective that he'd long held and embraced the theory of intelligent design, and eventually publicly announced that he had become a theist and indeed even a Christian. That'd be Gunter Beckley, a great German paleontologist.
Where is he in Germany?
He was at the Stuttgart Museum of Natural History, the largest natural history museum, a curator there. He was made somewhat unwelcome after he announced that he supported intelligent design.
Well, doesn't this get to the idea, though, that you still have it's just fascinating to me that there are people that say, no, you can't talk about that.
Mm-hmm.
This I just find this fascinating because, look, we saw this in Galileo's day, right? Galileo says, hey, I've got some evidence here. He was a Christian. Anybody who wants, you know, I talk about that in my book. He was a profound Christian. And he says, look at the telescope, hear the evidence. And they said then, no, we can't talk about that. That's unseemly. That's preposterous. It's offensive. It's blasphemous. The same thing is happening today. A guy like Gunter Beckley, tremendous credentials, tremendous credibility in that world. The moment he seems to side with you or people who are theists, suddenly the German scientific world says, we don't like you anymore.
And also Wikipedia. He was a great paleontologist until he announced this, and then his page was erased. But, you know, I'm really undeterred by that, because this thing is catching on worldwide. And it's a bit immodest, but for people who wonder, go to my webpage, look at the book endorsement. It's amazing the breadth of scientific the breadth of the scientific opinions that have been lodged in favor of this idea that science is pointing to God, and we're seeing this perspective beginning to catch on. As I mentioned, there's a disparity between the public presentation of science by spokespersons for science such as Richard Dawkins, Sam Harris, Lawrence Krauss, Neil deGrasse Tyson. The official line is still science and religion are at odds. Materialism is the correct worldview. Therefore, atheism is the most plausible way to think about the God question. But the evidence is pointing in a very different direction.
You're always more gracious than I am, which is not saying that much. But I want to say that I want to push back in the sense that I think sometimes we can be very polite, and you say, well, the evidence, to my mind, it's open and shut. In other words, I was astonished when I looked into some of the stuff we're talking about here and looked into what some of the new atheists had written. It's ridiculous. The only fair response is laughter, ridicule. In other words, at some point, you have to laugh, because what they're saying, even to give it to give it any credence or to say, well, there's a point. I don't know what point they have. In other words, I think we've gotten to a point where if you want to say, I'm an agnostic, I would say, great. Of course, we've got different views and things. But when somebody actually says what Dawkins has said, that the only knowledge that we have in the universe can come from science, no one believes that. In other words, it's one of the most ridiculous statements ever made. But people act like, well, Dawkins said it. And I think to myself, if Dawkins said the moon is made of, you know, green cheese, I'm not obliged to say, well, he has a point. In other words, the evidence has gotten overwhelming that I almost don't know how to respond when people insist on that stuff. I think that they're sort of gaslighting us. They're just sort of playing games with argument.
Well, one of the things that underscores that is the extent to which the atheist scientists are going to avoid these very compelling evidences and arguments. We're now getting people proposing space alien designers to account for the digital code in the DNA. We're getting the idea of a multiverse, you know, all these other universes out there that are disconnected from ours that we can't detect are the explanation for the fine tuning. With respect to the beginning of the universe, it's these very elaborate mathematical formulisms that are being developed to try to explain the universe from quote unquote nothing physical. But you have this prior mathematical structure that isn't nothing.
Hang on 1 second. This is very deep. We're going to unpack this in the next segment with Stephen Meyer. The book is Return of the God Hypothesis. Hey, folks, my friend Mike Lindell, the inventor and CEO of MyPillow, wants to give back to our listeners. That's you. You can get great discounts on all MyPillow products if you go to MyPillow.com right now and click on the radio listener specials. Get deep discounts on MyPillow's mattress toppers, wow, towels, and so much more. For example, Mike's offering a buy one, get one free offer on Giza sheets. All MyPillow products come with a 60-day money-back guarantee and a 10-year warranty. Go to MyPillow.com, click on the radio listener specials for the buy one, get one free offer on Giza sheets. Enter promo code ERIC. Have I ever mentioned that? ERIC is the promo code, or call 1-800-978-3057. That's 1-800-978-3057, 1-800-3057. Use promo code ERIC. And folks, we joke around a lot, but Albin and I rave about the mattress toppers. I tell everyone I know, check it out. MyPillow.com, use the promo code ERIC. MyPillow.com, use the promo code ERIC.
Hey, get rhythm. When you get the blues, come on, get a rhythm. When you get the blues, get a rhythm.
Folks, we're talking to the author of Return of the God Hypothesis. It sounds like a science fiction film, right? Return of the God Hypothesis. Son of God Hypothesis. Bride of God Hypothesis. This is really, to me, it's a delightful moment, Stephen, because the evidence is so overwhelming, and you know, very graciously and very scientifically and clearly put it in your book. What you just said, again, graciously referring to what the materialists are coming up with to counter the God hypothesis. And I just want to be on the record as saying you're being very gracious to the point that I think the only proper response is a horse laugh. When somebody says, okay, we'll tell you how DNA and all this stuff came to Earth, aliens, if you don't laugh at that, you're, you know, it's hilarious, because you say, hey, okay, so where do the aliens get it from? I mean, isn't that the question? Like, the idea is that they say aliens, and you say, oh, okay. Well, of course, yeah, there's absolutely no okay. Where do the aliens get it from? In other words, you're kicking it back. They what do they call it? Directed panspermia. I like they give it this big name. Aliens. We don't even know if aliens exist, but you're saying, oh, yeah, aliens brought it. We know, if you were teaching a class of eighth graders and an eighth grader stood up with a straight face and said this, you'd say, okay, you know, sit down, Barney. We've had enough of you today. You know, because it just becomes, there's a comedy to it for me, that, you know, multiverse theory. Why are we taking this seriously? I guess maybe you have to, because you're an honorable scientific
thinker. We're
taking
it seriously because it is the extent to which the materialist atheist scientists are now going to avoid the evidence that we've been talking about. To put this in a little broader context, there's a wonderful quote from Dawkins where he frames the issue very beautifully. He says, "The universe has exactly the properties we should expect. If at bottom there's no purpose, no design, nothing but blind, pitiless indifference," where blind, pitiless indifference refers to strictly materialistic processes. So he says the universe looks as it should if nothing but matter and energy were at work, if materialism is true. And I simply ask the question in the book, is that true? That's a great way of framing the issue, but is that true? Well, it turns out that the materialists did not expect and don't expect the evidence for a beginning to the universe. They expect the universe to be eternal and self-existent, always having been here. They didn't expect the fine-tuning, and they didn't expect the digital information revolution that we found inside the cell. In fact, about 2 months ago, Dawkins tweeted that he was knocked sideways with wonder at the digital information capability at work inside living cells. These are completely unexpected discoveries. I mean, if you find inside a living cell something that, as Bill Gates has said, is akin to a computer program, that's not what you'd expect without if your hypothesis is that there was no programmer. So in each case, the great discoveries of modern science about biological and cosmological origins have been contrary to the expectations of materialists. And in virtue of this, we see these very fanciful, convoluted explanations being advanced, like multiple universes, like alien designers, and like in the area of cosmology, the idea of imaginary time, and the claim that we can explain the universe from literally nothing, except these equations of quantum physics, which are conceptual and therefore indicate a prior mind behind the universe. So even the attempt to circumvent the God hypothesis has led back to the God hypothesis in very strange ways. So I think you're exactly right that some of this is getting very odd indeed.
I'd never written about new atheism or atheism before, but in writing this book with a title like Is Atheism Dead? Obviously, the science is astonishing, the biblical archaeology is astonishing, but I thought I need to deal with what do the atheists say. And I really felt that at this point, they've sold zillions of books and influenced all kinds of people. When I looked at it, I was staggered at the shallowness, the dishonesty. I just thought, I can't really be particularly gracious. In other words, I think that the most gracious thing you can do is honestly say, this is silly. It's not even worthy of serious response in many ways because it's actually silly and they've got to know that it's silly. They're too smart to actually believe some of this stuff. And so when you say, oh, aliens did it or whatever, if they're not gaslighting intentionally, it's very close to intentional, and you have to say, excuse me, do you see what you're doing there? It's silly. You wouldn't let your student get away with that. Why are you trying to get away with it? So much of it I found honestly funny. Things that Dawkins said, in particular, things that Hitchens said, I thought these are so smart, these two figures, but they are either being intentionally foolish or unintentionally foolish in putting these things forward, which eventually makes it impossible for me to take them very seriously on anything. Because if you're so driven by emotion or an animus against faith or people of faith, I think you've lost your ability to think logically. Now you've got this thing that you're hanging on to, and you'll say anything to win the debate. I have to ask you, the recent tweet by Dawkins, what do you think caused him to tweet that? Was there some new news about the technology?
Well, He saw an animation of the DNA replication mechanism that's at work inside cells. It was done by an Australian group with expertise in molecular biology. And we have a number of animations. There's a number on my website for showing these miniature machines that have been discovered in cells, rotary engines, sliding clamps, little robotic walking motor proteins that tow vesicles of material along tracks to deliver the material to the right place in the cell so the cell can build certain structures at the right time. It's an awesome, the world of nanotechnology inside cells is absolutely awesome, and it bespeaks design at every possible level.
Do you think it's possible that Dawkins is kind of paving the way for him to be able to say, maybe I was wrong on some of this?
He's hedged a bit in different ways. I think what's happening, and this underscores the thesis of your book, I do think that the new atheism that came on the scene with a big bang, if you will, in the mid-2000s, 2006, 2007, when these books like The God Delusion were super popular, I think that's increasingly a spent force. Many of the proponents of that new atheist view are, you know, for example, Steven Weinberg has just passed away. Dawkins is getting up in age. He's also way overstated his case and has become something of a figure of ridicule in the UK where he lives. And but also, I think the evidence is starting to percolate into the scientific community. People are beginning to take this seriously, and books like yours and mine, I hope, will make that bring
indeed,
that to light.
We're out of time. Stephen Meyer, you're a treasure. The book is Return of the God Hypothesis. Thank you.
If you change your mind,
take a chance.
I'm the first in line.
Take a chance.
Honey, I'm still free.
Take a chance.
Folks, welcome back. Oh my gosh, Albin.
Oh yeah.
I am. I want to tell my audience, folks, I am doing so much media for this book, Is Atheism Dead? That I don't know what day it is anymore. It's like hilarious. I'm in Phoenix, Arizona.
You look a little haggard. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I feel haggard. I've been doing all these different podcasts and stuff. But I want to say that the response to the book has been fantastic. People who have read it, this is always the acid test. You know, it's not, are people buying it? Are they reading it and loving it? Really, 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 it's been very gratifying to me. So I'm glad that, you know, it's one thing for my friends like you to say they like it. But so it's been really cool. I want to say, I think I said it earlier, I hope people will please, please, please share about the book on social media, any social media, wherever you are. Please share any YouTube videos, any Rumble videos, Gab, Parler, Getter, Instagram, and of course, Twitter. Facebook is dead to me. Actually, no, Facebook, I did an interview, I think I said, with Charlie Kirk last night. One of the most fun things ever. So that's posted all over. And if you're signed up for my newsletter, we will send you all this stuff and you don't have to go looking for it. But we need your help in launching this book. I'm no longer even slightly shy about saying that, because I know what it takes to launch something that is dramatically pro-God. Already on Amazon, there are nasty atheists leaving one star reviews.
Yeah.
If you can leave a nice review on Amazon or someplace, or like the reviews that are nice and dislike the reviews that are where the people didn't even read the book.
Yeah.
But I want to enjoin your help in this.
We need your help. Even if you have to say, I hate Eric, but I love his new book.
Yeah.
That's a nice review.
That's fine with me.
We'll take it.
I appreciate that. I'm going to be just doing so much and traveling so much, but I really do want to say to folks, first of all, thank you for all your help. Thank you for pre-ordering the book. Thank you for ordering the book. Thank you for sharing stuff. But particularly on places like Twitter and all those places, I do need social media help, because people like Albin, they're not even on Twitter. They can't help me. You, the reader, the audience, the listener, I need your help just to get the word out. This week is crucial. I'll say it again and again and again. And when the week's over, I'll stop saying it, because the week will be over. But this week is really crucial to get the word out. And if you're going to buy any copies of the book, as I say, the 45% off is only available till the end of the month. That's like in a few days. That's what, 10 days. So you have to go to ericmetaxas.com. And when you scroll down on the book page, I believe it's the Baker link. That's the easiest, 45% off. There's a number of them. There are a lot of independent bookstores. We always want to support independent bookstores. So that's it. And Albin, how are we doing with our fundraiser for Religious Liberty?
We're doing really great for Alliance Defending Freedom. We've had a couple very big donations. People finding out if you give $2,000, you not only get a signed copy of Is Atheism Dead by Eric Metaxas, but I throw in my Halloween book from Hamster Homes.
Get out.
Afraid of the Dark. Yeah. So you can get them both. $2,000 donation. It's limited time, just for the next week. That's all it is.
So, and you know what? If anybody gives $10,000,
yes,
I will have dinner with them, with as many people as they want, or as few, wherever. You know, I've done this a lot of times. It's a joy for me to spend the evening with people.
The banner at the top of the page, ADF, Alliance Defending Freedom.
Yes, and it's not at ericmetaxas.com. Everything else is at ericmetaxas.com. This stuff is at the radio website, MetaxasTalk.com. And if you give $14,000, I will shave my beard on the air. God bless you.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.